Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to a new edition of the ATA LWYM podcast, which stands for Absolute Truth. Absolutely. This is what we dedicate ourselves to doing here at LWYM, to disseminate the truth, because we understand that what Jesus tells us is true, which is if we know the truth, if we adopt it, if we live by its statutes, that the very same will make us free. And understanding that truth gives us liberty, gives us freedom, and that we can enjoy these things, which are God-given gifts, then we should absolutely try with all of our might to search for truth and live according to its statutes. Welcome to this LWYM podcast. My name is Gio. I am the youth leader of LWYM. And on today's podcast, I would like to share with you a little commentary on something that has become a bit of a cultural phenomenon, if you will, and that is specifically the Hunger Games. Some people might hear me say this now and say, Gio, you're a little late in this. The Hunger Games is old. That book or those trilogy have been around for a while, and the movie came out last year. Now's the time when you see it. Yes, now's the time when I finally saw the movie. And honestly, I didn't feel like paying $30 to see it in the film, because I'm really getting sick and tired of paying $30, or rather, let me say, I got sick and tired of paying these outrageous sums for tickets to go see a movie, which I know it's going to be complete garbage, all right? So I pretty much wait. If it looks interesting enough, I'll wait until it comes out on Blu-ray or whatnot. I'll wait until it comes out on you know, the pay-per-view channels and watch it there, because honestly, I'm really, I don't feel like spending my hard-earned money on movies that I know are just complete garbage. They're just junk. But there are a few films that obviously they do have a good message to them, but they are few and far in between. The last one that I can tell you that I went to see, which had this great message to it, was The Dark Knight Rises. Between then, I can't remember the last time I went to go see a film, to be honest with you, and I don't miss it. There are people that can't live without going to the theater, but for me, it's pointless just to watch and be entertained all the time. I mean, what's the point of life if all you're doing is being entertained? You're so engulfed in being entertained that you're missing out on the more important things in life. This is why there are so many people that are addicted to video games and whatnot, and I feel sorry for them, especially a lot of young people. They're addicted to video games and they can't get away from the computer screen. And this is something that I advise all you young people that listen to this podcast. Get away from the computer screen. Live life. Get away from the virtual world and live life. Oh, gee, you're such a pessimist. You know what? Take the advice. Live by it. And see if it does wonders for you. I'm pretty sure it will, and this is why I guarantee it. Anyways, before I continue with the commentary that I have for you today, I'd like to establish a few things. Number one, follow us on Twitter, @LWYM. You will receive all of the latest updates that we also post on the website. And also, you can follow my personal Twitter feed, which is @GiovanniDC. How do you spell that? Very simple. J-I-O, V as in Victor, A as in Apple, N-N-E, GiovanniDC, which I'm posting tweets on a daily basis with things that are for, of course, your education and amusement. Anyways, recounting, I was watching the Hunger Games, and I was very interested because I heard from a lot of different pundits and commentators that the Hunger Games had a conservative twist to the message, that the movie, as a matter of fact, advocated for revolution in some ways, that the movie advocated for smaller government, and it showcases the evils of a despotic, tyrannical government with a tyrannical leader at its head. And I said, you know, this might be interesting. Let's check it out. Anyways, I was able to sit down and watch it. And there's a few points that I want to get through, in which I see that there are things that I have to admit, I have not read the books. Honestly, I've spent most of my time, and I spend most of my time researching history. I love history, and I don't spend a lot of time reading works of fiction. Because a lot of times when you're reading a work of fiction, it feels to me like it's a waste of time. I'd rather read something that is relevant, something that is historically accurate, so that I can know history and therefore learn from it. And it teaches us a lesson. What is it that the saying goes? Those that understand history's errors, or the errors that have been committed through history, are not going to repeat them. Where conversely, those that do not learn from historical errors or errors that have been committed through history, they're bound to make the same mistakes. So pretty much I live by this, I don't want to call it a mantra, but I do live by this code, if you will, and this is why I constantly read history books. I mean, there's nothing better than the real thing, is it? Even though a lot of people will say that, well, entertainment makes it more on the edge of your seat. What could be more on the edge of your seat than reading about the days leading up to Lincoln's assassination? I mean, that in and of itself is amazing. I mean, I recommend books like this all of the time for those people that want to get a little bit into history, and but they have this, they like reading fictional material. I tell them to check out books like Killing Lincoln by Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard. Those are great books. They mix both, but nevertheless, the historical aspect is in there. So if you want to get into history and see how amazing it is, check out books like those. I think you'll find those very interesting, and it'll give you a segue, a gateway, if you will, into how interesting history can truly be. Anyways, having said all that, I will continue with my Hunger Games commentary. I know I got kind of off track there. Anyways, there were a few things I noticed in the film. First and foremost, there is this anti-Big Brother sentiment that runs throughout the film. The film makes you feel, I would almost say contempt, hatred against those that are in power and that are oppressing the little guy. And you can tell clearly, very clearly, that this is a knock against big government. You know, Suzanne Collins, the person who wrote the books and also was heavily participating in the films and the screenplay and so on and so forth. This comes through very clearly. But there are a bunch of things also that I noticed with the film that I think we should be very careful in and must examine those and must retain what's good, if there is any good within the film, and then, of course, discard that which is bad. I'll start with the bad first. First and foremost, there was a heavy, 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 heavy dose of homosexuality in the film. Someone might say, Gio, I've seen the film. There is no sexual interplay between two guys there. Where are you getting this from? Well, very simply put, all of the male characters in the film seem to be very effeminate. This starts with Lenny Kravitz's character, who is the one who dresses up Katniss Everdeen. And this guy is always wearing a gold eyeliner, and he's very soft around the edges. I mean, you can see it all over the place. And, of course, it paints these feminist males in a very, very, flattering light, if you will. This other Woody Harrelson's character is also very effeminate. The guy moves in very flamboyant manner. Also, Stanley Tucci's character, the person who plays the talk show host, is also very, very flamboyant looking and looks very crooked on the edges, if you know what I mean. And there isn't a representation of the alpha male in the film. Rather, you get more of an alpha female, which is the character of Katniss Everdeen. She's the one that stands in place of her sister and volunteers because she does not want her sister to die in the Hunger Games. And obviously, when it refers to the Hunger Games here, it's important to note that, I don't know if you picked up on this, but obviously Suzanne Collins, even before I read what inspired her to write the Hunger Games, it was very obvious that she alluded to the Roman Colosseum and those times where they would just have these battles to the death. It was very obvious that this was part of the narrative. This was part of what inspired her. And of course, she goes on to say that she was also inspired by reality television and the Iraq War and how those two melded together. And this is where she got the idea for the Hunger Games. Now, it's obvious that, again, that's part of the bad that I saw within the film. I also saw incompetent parenting in the film. I saw that because the older sister is the one who's having to take care of the younger sister in this situation, and she's screaming. The older sister, Katniss, is screaming at her mom and telling her what to do. Obviously, the child is smarter and more involved in the life of the sibling, and you see that coming through. I mean, you clearly see these concepts and these ideas coming through in the film, and this is stuff that is embedded in the hearts and minds of those that are watching the film. Now, of course, to the good, I would dare say that there is a lot of good in the film. There is this anti-big government sentiment that rolls throughout the film. You feel it, you see it. You see how corrupt this government has become to the point where they say, well, we're just asking for two individuals from every district as a tribute. And it's very interesting that they use that word. I remember the first thing I thought was, it's very, very interesting how Suzanne Collins placed the word tribute in there. And it gives you a sense by the words, the verbiage that is used within the film, that she wanted to portray this government as, this is what you're going to give us so that in turn we don't destroy you. That's what the capital, if you will, was telling the districts. You do this, You send two children to the slaughter every year, and we will not destroy you. We will remind you every year that this is your tribute to that uprising that you had years ago, and that because of our mercy, because of our grace, we will not splatter you like flies. We won't do that. And that's pretty much what I got from the film. I think that in all these things, this serves a greater lesson, and it's this. Whenever you're watching something for entertainment value, remember that these people are always trying to convey a message. That's the most important part of all of this. The individuals that write the screenplay, that write the story, that are putting together the score, the music score, the scenes, how the camera is working, the lighting, they're trying to portray something. They're trying to give you a message. And I think that we all have to be very discerning in how we pick up these messages and how we interpret them. What do I mean by that? Well, very simply put, we can't simply just go to the theater and say, well, this is just for entertainment's sake. You find the messages are there. The directors, the screenwriters, all of these people are telling you that, and in interviews, they are acknowledging that they have a message that they want to portray. The thing is, this culture has been indoctrinated, has been conditioned to say to themselves, when you're watching entertainment, this is nothing more or nothing less than simple entertainment. There is no message here. Move on. Please move on. Nothing to see here. And the reality is that there is always a message. There is always an agenda. There's always something underlying there. There's always something that someone is trying to get across into your mind, into your heart. And a lot of these things, they creep in there without you knowing it. Without you knowing it. It happens. It happens. And I think we need to be aware. As Christians, we need to be aware as people who have this ability to discern whether or not the message is good. And this is why every time I see a film, every time I'm watching a television show, I listen to the lyrics of a song, I'm always very discerning, because you don't want any garbage to set into your heart, into your mind. You don't want something that is antithetical to Scripture, to what God tells us, to settle in into the heart, into the mind, which all of a sudden that manifests itself now in beliefs, in attitudes, in comportment, in behavior that is now against what God has told us that we should live like, you know, what God tells us that we should do. And I think we have to be very careful with this. And my advice is, when you're watching films like these, that you would watch them with a very, very, very attentive eye and ear to detail, okay? You'll notice that there are things that are hidden within there. I'll give you one example before I end. Tron Legacy, a movie that was had fascinating graphics, a movie that was technologically, of course, advanced. But in the movie, you notice that there's this anti-capitalist sentiment. What do you mean, Gio? Well, the founder, which is the father of the son who goes into the grid, you'll notice that he wanted to give everything away for free because he was creating this new digital frontier. And yet all of a sudden, the evil capitalist who wanted to turn a book, they took the company Encom and they wanted to turn a profit. Last I checked, everybody wants to be able to make money. But yet in the movie, they're demonizing those that are simply trying to make a profit. And there's nothing evil about it. But more and more today, you find that movies are anti-capitalist. They have this sentiment out there, which, oh, we have to hate on the rich people because they're greedy. No, not every single rich person is greedy. You know, there are poor people that I know that are greedy. You don't have to have money in order to be greedy. That's just the reality of the situation. But yet, it's a common sentiment that we find in films. And then what happens? We watch these films. We think they're just there for entertainment value. And then these things begin to indoctrinate us and change our way of thinking. And now we're altered. And hence, we have Occupy Wall Street. So there you go. It's a very simple analysis, and you can see how these things manifest themselves in real life, how everything that we're watching, everything that we're listening, all of a sudden begins to embed itself in our system, in our spirit, and therefore it comes out eventually in ideology, in saying, and indeed. We have to be very careful with the things that we watch with, you know, the old saying, be careful your eyes what they see, be careful your ears what they hear, be careful your mouth what it speaks. I mean, it's couldn't be any truer. Jesus himself said it, ladies and gentlemen. Anyways, that's all the time I have left for this podcast. I wish I had a little more time, but, you know, I think this simple commentary will do. It will suffice for this time, and I hope that you are enjoying this podcast. Please refer these to a friend. Refer these to a friend. Let your friends know about LWIM. Let them know about the website, about the Twitter feed. We need to get the gospel out there, the truth, so that people can know the truth. Oh, also, I have a weekly challenge that I want to extend to each and every one of you that listen to this podcast. And what is that? Simply to let your teachers know what the challenge is this week. What do you mean, Gio? Well, on a weekly basis, I'm going to extend a challenge to teachers, and I hope that they would answer these questions in a very, how would I say, acknowledgeable manner, but more than that, in a way where it is satisfactory, if you will. And I would dare you to ask your teachers these questions so that in reality you can see that what a lot of what they're teaching you is pretty much ideological junk. And my challenge this week, and I hope that you would share this podcast with your teachers, is the following. Teacher, professor, psychology. It teaches us that everyone has a mental disorder. If that's the case, and you are a person that believes in psychology and acknowledges this to your students and also encourages your students to look for psychological help or asks them to get into the field, do you have a mental disorder? What is it? And how do you deal with it? That's the challenge that I have for teachers, and I hope that you teachers can answer this to your students. And I hope that the students can find out the truth about this. More than likely, you'll find that the truth is not anywhere near what a lot of times teachers will tell you. But hey, that's what we're here for, to ask the proper questions in order to achieve and to arrive at truth. That's all the time I have left for this podcast. Thank you for joining us. I hope that you will join us for fresh audio next week. And also visit the website for the latest updates, lwim.org, and also check out our Twitter feeds at LWIM, at Giovanni DC, at LWIM Pure, which is a site dedicated for young women. And again, that's all the time I have left. May the Lord shine his face upon you.